Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I want to see my family, but I can't. I can't leave this country because I could die, you know, in Honduras.
Stuck between two countries, a Honduran immigrant faces a legal battle in the U.S. and a cultural battle in his native land. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, April 10th, 2012. I'm Emily Frost. The bats were cracking this afternoon at Dodgers Stadium as the scent of peanuts and Cracker Jacks filled the air. It's Dodger Stadium's 50th opening day, and Dodger fans were out in force to honor the past and welcome the new season. Devin Altschul went to Elysian Park this morning to talk to fans.
Dodgers players had been hoping for a good show of support on opening day, and today the fans did not disappoint. There is not a Pittsburgh Pirate fan in sight.
Go Dodgers!
It's Dodger Stadium opening day. You don't want to miss it.
Fans especially didn't want to miss the festivities today to celebrate the franchise that put Los Angeles on the national sports map and the stadium that made it possible. Fan Alfredo Morales could barely catch his breath. He was so excited for the game and to see Clayton Kershaw pitch.
I mean, first, it's 50-year anniversary of Dodger Stadium, the greatest place on earth. Second, we have the reigning Cy Young Award winner coming to pitch for all of us to see. There'll be 50,000 Dodger fans here for the first time in a long time. When baseball season starts, it's like life has meaning again.
The Dodgers held a pregame ceremony to honor the 50-year anniversary and members of the 1962 team that opened the stadium. The first pitch was thrown by Terry Seidler, whose mother threw out the park's first pitch 50 years ago. For a longtime fan like Sam Kane, it's the exciting baseball milestones that he has witnessed at the park that keep him coming back.
I loved seeing the poster driving here of Maury Wills stealing bases, Davey Loeb stealing bases, and now our D. Gordon. It's going to be number one season for the Dodgers.
Dodgers fans could use a winning season. Just 1 year since the beating of Giants fan Brian Stowe at Dodger Stadium, the public divorce of former owners Frank and Jamie McCourt, and pandemonium in the front office, fans are optimistic that Magic Johnson's ownership of the team will restore faith and pride in the Dodgers.
I could not be happier about Magic. The best offseason news any of us could have expected. We're winning it all. This is our year.
Win or lose, the fans this year will be a presence in their Dodger blue. Devin Altschul, Annenberg Radio News.
And in their opening game, the Dodgers beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 2-1. Sheriff Lee Baca and the American Civil Liberties Union teamed up today to present solutions to overcrowding in L.A. County jails, a problem that is expected to worsen over the next few years. Tricia Tonko reports.
As part of a larger effort to reform L.A. County jails, today Sheriff Lee Baca announced for the first time publicly that he is committed to closing down Men's Central Jail, the largest jail in the world. The jail has been criticized in the past for inmate abuse and unsanitary conditions. And Sheriff Baca admits that changes need to be made to other jails as well.
What do you do with a person when they're in jail? You're going to just leave them in there and not give them any help mentally? We believe in educating people to the extent that they reinvent what they are as a human being, and then they go out and they're more trustworthy.
Serious crimes like rape, murder, and theft have been declining in LA County since 2000. Yet more people than ever are being incarcerated. Margaret Winter, the associate director of the ACLU National Prison Project, points to the reason.
Why are these numbers so vast? It's because we incarcerate millions of people for low-level, non-violent offenses.
Prison expert Dr. James Austin was appointed by Sheriff Baca to find out how to safely reduce the rising prison population. Austin says one problem is the jails fill up with people waiting for their trials.
They cannot get out because they can't raise the bail. The bails are very high here in Los Angeles County. So what's blocking them is not their risk level, it's not the charge, it's the bail amount, and they just can't raise the money.
Austin says that low-risk offenders should be free until their trial. Low risk is someone judged unlikely to commit another crime and who is not violent. Austin says education programs in prison are a better option. After completing their educational programs, low-risk offenders will be under community supervision by parole and probation agents. The ACLU and Sheriff Baca agree on Austin's recommendations and the need to safely close down Men's Central Jail. Baca wants to use the Austin report as a roadmap for reducing mass incarceration, but he'll need the support of the LA County Board of Supervisors, LA courts, and local government. Tricia Tonko, Annenberg Radio News. Republican presidential candidate Rick Santorum ended his campaign today with a speech in his home state of Pennsylvania. The former senator said his decision to drop out of the race was for personal and not political reasons. Logan Healy reports.
After a weekend tending to his daughter after she was hospitalized with pneumonia, Santorum said he and his family had come to the decision to end his campaign for the presidency. With the Pennsylvania primary just 2 weeks away, Santorum had been hoping a victory in his home state would give him the momentum needed to carry his candidacy through until the Republican National Convention in August. In his 12-minute speech, Santorum did not mention Republican frontrunner Mitt Romney and gave no indication as to when or if he would endorse him. Kathy Obradovich is the political columnist for the Des Moines Register. Santorum's campaign successes have largely been credited to his triumph in the Iowa caucuses. Obradovich doesn't believe Santorum's decision to not endorse Romney immediately was meant to hurt the frontrunner, but rather focus on his own reasons for leaving the race.
His campaign certainly didn't rule out an endorsement, and I suspect that it would have a greater impact if it came on a different day.
Super PACs have played a big role in the presidential race so far, and Obradovich said they may have caused Santorum to drop out.
I think that without super PACs helping with some campaign advertising on his behalf, that he would have run out of money and would not have been able to stay in long enough for him to gain any traction.
Some worry that social conservatives won't support Romney in the general election because of his Mormon faith and past pro-choice positions.
I think that social conservatives will support him. The question is, how hard will they work for him?
Though not a likely vice presidential candidate for Romney, Santorum could end up with a cabinet post in a Romney administration. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
A report released today shows that just 16% of Latinos in California have college degrees, compared with 39% of all adults in the state. The study's author says this college gap is particularly troubling in Los Angeles, where Latinos make up 38% of the population and 75% of the school district. And now for the weather. You should be able to stay dry on your evening commute, but rains are expected to arrive late tonight and carry on until tomorrow, an overnight low of 51. Bring your umbrellas with you tomorrow, because that rain is sticking around, at least until the afternoon. A high of 59 and a low of 50 tomorrow. And on Thursday, partly cloudy skies, a high of 58 and a low of 51. Later on Annenberg Radio News, Tom's shoes are more popular than ever, but we hear why some say the company's shoe donation policy could actually hurt poor companies. Janitors and their supporters gathered in Pasadena today in what was one in a series of protests aimed at the union contractors who are cutting their benefits when the contract is up at the end of the month. Andrea Kowalczyk tells us more about how these protests tie in with the Occupy movement.
About 100 protesters walked from bank to bank in Old Town Pasadena chanting "Justice for Janitors" in both English and Spanish. They held signs with the same slogan and wore the bright purple shirts of their union, the United Service Workers West. The janitors' contract with contractors, including America Building Maintenance and DMS, will expire on April 30th. Negotiations have been tense, with the janitors voting last week to strike on May 1st if their demands aren't met. Union organizer Natalie Contreras says the cuts the contractors want are unreasonable.
What they're proposing are wage freezes for 6 years, having them pay difference in increases on insurance on top of co-pays, which at the end of the day with the wage freezes don't add up and would create an enormous burden on our working janitors.
The protests were meant to be part of the Occupy movement of the 99% versus the 1%. Karen Berger is a member of Occupy Pasadena who came out to support what she called the exploited janitors.
It's not right what the 1% are doing. They're taking advantage of people because they think they can.
The protesters chose banks as the stops on the march to allude to the connections to Occupy. Contreras says the banks make up many of the buildings these janitors clean, and that it is them who are pushing for the benefit cuts.
This is part of the larger message that's going out across the country in unity with the 99% that these banks are getting away with not paying taxes. These banks are getting away with all these corporate loopholes, but yet they don't want to put what's needed into the working families, which is what would help get this country out of this recession.
United Service Workers West will be organizing more protests and other activities in the coming weeks, all leading up to the possible strike. Andrea Kowalczyk, Annenberg Radio News.
Today in our series 20-somethings, we meet a 23-year-old UCLA student from Central America who came to the United States 12 years ago. His family has since gone back to their native Honduras, but the young man was terrified to return to the place where he suffered a traumatic childhood. As Raquel Estupinan reports, a U.S. immigration judge will soon decide his fate.
America is my home. I don't consider Honduras my home, because how can I consider a place my home where they're very hazardous to my life? I don't want to be living in fear or knowing that I can die tomorrow just because people are very homophobic over there.
Aiden Caballero's family left Honduras for California for many reasons. In Honduras, Aiden's dad killed a neighbor, pistol-whipped his mom, and beat Aiden again and again. But worse for Aiden, his uncle repeatedly sexually abused him.
I was crying every night. I was crying to God, like, please help me and don't let me be gay. At some point, I started changing that and saying, God, let things happen as they should and just keep me safe.
While at UCLA, Aiden came out as gay. He's quick to add that's not because of sexual abuse. His worry now is of being deported to a country he no longer considers safe. So in 2009, Aiden applied for political asylum based on his fear of persecution in Honduras for being gay. Human rights groups have recorded at least 62 homicides in the LGBT community in Honduras since 2010.
And you have many people who are very religious and will not tolerate or respect people who are different from them. There's no sense of survival.
With pressure from the U.S. to take action, the Honduran government formally set up a unit in November of 2011 to investigate murders and hate crimes against the LGBT community.
If anyone sees me hanging out with a guy coming in and out of my apartment, people see all that stuff. And at some point, the truth comes out. Maybe I might be walking home someday and be attacked. That happens every day in Honduras.
Since 1994, the U.S. has recognized homosexual individuals as eligible for protection under asylum law. The asylum application means Aiden can't go back home, so he must live 3,000 miles from his family.
Hola, mami.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Muy bien. ¿Cómo está?
Aiden hasn't seen his family in more than 2 years. They probably can't afford to come to his UCLA graduation next year. All he has for now are the 15-minute weekend phone calls to his mom.
Okay, pues me la quiero mucho.
It is 8:21 for a hamburger with grilled onions, cheeseburger with grilled onions, fries, and a medium drink.
At one point, Aiden worked two jobs to raise $4,500 in legal fees. And now to afford tuition, he takes time off from working toward his philosophy degree to instead work the drive-thru window. Sometimes he thinks he sees a familiar face.
I saw this little girl that looked like my little sister, right? And knowing that all my family is in Honduras, I told my crew workers, okay, I'll be back. And I went to the bathroom, I started crying because to me, I just thought, I'm working here, I'm tired, I barely sleep. I want to be at UCLA, but I'm not. I want to see my family, but I can't. I can't leave this country because I could die, you know, in Honduras. All these things I don't have because of a paper, just one paper.
One document that Aiden says may literally make the difference between survival and persecution.
When I reflect on my life, I thank God that I'm strong and that I persevere and stuff like that. But sometimes I'm like, Jesus Christ, I could like commit a suicide. The way I see it is, well, I'm here for a reason. Maybe it's to make that change that needs to be needed, you know what I mean? Either as a professor or as a lawyer or as a judge.
Aiden was supposed to meet with an immigration judge March 1st, but for the third time, it was postponed one more year. In the meantime, he's allowed to remain in the U.S. and continue planning his future. For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Raquel Estupinan.
tattoo shops don't usually have the reputation for being family-friendly establishments. But as Jackie Grant reports, one tattoo shop in South Los Angeles is a family affair.
The sound of that needle is coming from Tony Zan at Koi Fish Tattoo Shop. He's inking up Reginald Ross, a Leimert Park resident.
I'm actually getting a tattoo. It's going to be the baby angel side of my face. The baby angel is going to symbolize what I've been through for 30 years.
And while Ross is getting his tattoo done, don't be surprised if you find a bubbly 3-year-old girl running around the shop. Things are done a little differently at this family-owned parlor. 25-year-old Aida Campos is the owner, and her 3-year-old daughter Delilah loves to hang with the customers. But it didn't start with Aida. It was her mother, Sylvia Campos, who opened up the shop 10 years ago. She did it to help her brother stay out of trouble.
My uncle was a tattoo artist, and he was working out of our house. So my mom had some money saved up, and they entered a partnership, and they opened it together. He's always been an artist. He's always been drawing and painting, so he picked it up as a way of doing something positive with his life instead of going in and out of jail like he used to.
Sylvia Campos didn't have any experience in the industry. Before she opened up her shop in 2002, she had worked at a nonprofit organization helping disabled children. Now the Campos family owns 2 tattoo shops. The other one, Purified Ink, is in Carson. It's unusual to have a female ownership in an industry that is largely dominated by men, but Campos has found it advantageous.
We have moms bring their daughters to get piercings, which they're usually afraid, but when they come and they see there's a female piercer, it's female owned, they know that they're not going to be disrespected in our studio.
No one knows what it's like to work with the Campos family better than Tony Zan, an employee and friend of the family for 7 years.
You feel comfortable working around these people. You feel like you are part of the family. You know, they trust you, they respect you as an individual, they respect your choices, and they respect your ideas for the shop. So you're not just working for them, it feels like you're working with them.
While this family is incredibly close, everything isn't always peachy at the shop.
We pull each other's hair every now and then because we see each other all the time. You know, you want to give them respect and patience because they're family, but at the same time, it's business, so it's a little bit more difficult.
Aida hasn't just learned the trials of working with family, but also many valuable lessons working in an industry that isn't always respected. She would like to pass that knowledge on to Delilah.
I would really want her to pursue something that she loves and not let anyone tell her not to do it. Because that's what happens in this industry, is everyone tells us, oh, that's not a real job. And they don't realize that this is an art form. This is definitely what we're passionate about. And at the end of the day, I know that I'm doing what I really want to do with my life, and I'm bringing happiness to others by doing so.
The Campos family will celebrate the shop's 10-year anniversary on April 20th with live music, live piercings, and of course, live tattoos. Jackie Grant, Annenberg Radio News.
Today, thousands of people are going barefoot as part of the second annual One Day Without Shoes. The campaign was launched by Tom's Shoes, the trendy company that donates a pair of shoes for every pair bought. Some commentators criticize the one-for-one model, saying those campaigns don't do as much good as they claim. Sandra Schimmelfennig runs the blog Good Intentions Are Not Enough. She launched the blog after years in the nonprofit sector watching donations get funneled to ineffective projects. I asked her for her thoughts on Tom's awareness-raising campaign.
What they're raising awareness of is very often inaccurate. There's this idea that there aren't any shoes anywhere in the developing world, especially not in Africa, and I have people get onto my blog really convinced that shoes are not available. And this is incorrect. There are shoes available everywhere. There are shoemakers, there are people selling shoes, there are flip-flops, there are all types of shoes. People feel like they're having a positive impact, but really they're generating this misperception. They're passing the misperception on to an even larger audience.
Is there something better that we could all be doing besides taking off our shoes? What would your vision be?
I've done a counter campaign two years in a row now, and this year's counter campaign, we're really focusing on local champions, on local voices, on really starting to try to hear from people living in those communities what their real challenges are, what their real hopes and desires, and what they're trying to accomplish, trying to get past this white and shining armor, this outsider coming in to rescue the local people, the Westerners being able to make the difference.
Some people would say, well, you know, even if Tom's Shoes isn't doing everything that it could. It's a company, it's not a charity, and if they give away a pair of shoes, then that's great. Is there any negative side to actually this one-for-one charity model? Is it actually hurting people living in the developing world?
It is, and most people don't realize this. They believe that, you know, people living in poverty need everything, and if you give them things, that's great. But what's actually happening is you've got people in that local area trying very hard to make a living, you know, making shoes or selling shoes. If you bring in donated goods and you flood that market with free goods and you give everyone shoes, what you've done is you have outcompeted those local sellers who are trying to make a living. You've made it so that they suddenly have far fewer people purchasing their shoes. Now, some people will argue, well, the people don't have money to buy those shoes. But what if Tom's or any of these other organizations, instead of flooding the market with donated goods, went in and purchased those shoes locally?
Or perhaps set up their company in that local community so that they were employing local people?
And there are a lot of shoe companies now that have started doing it. There's an ethical shoe movement right now where a lot of people are creating shoes in the local community, that not only do they sell in the local community, but then they also sell to the export market. And so that does create local jobs.
And has Tom's responded at all to this kind of criticism? Do you think that they will change their business practices or their model?
There is a slight movement in what I would consider to be the right direction, but it's nothing that they want to advertise. It's nothing that they want to build their business model on. In Ethiopia, they do have a local shoe manufacturer that creates shoes that are appropriate for that local community, and they're very different than the shoes that Tom's will market to you. And I'd like to see that moving in more of a direction and more of that happening, but they don't publicize it. They don't argue for it. They're very much still in the buy one, give one, we're putting shoes on feet, the children's feet, and you're not doing anything but criticizing from an armchair.
So would your general advice to someone who wants to give be, you know, separate whether you want to give because it makes you feel good from actually helping on the ground?
And that's very difficult. That would be my advice, to try to take your personal motivations out of your giving. And it's hard because we connect who we give with our sense of ourself and what projects make us feel good. But to try to take your personal motivations out of it, instead, putting yourself in the position of the people on the receiving end. If you're in a country with 80% unemployment rate, is having your kid receive a pair of shoes what you'd want? Or if there's an alternative, what is that alternative? Would you rather have a job?
The Metropolitan Water District of Southern California voted today to approve a rate hike for all 26 of its customers. The Water Board voted for a 5% yearly increase in the next 2 years. That hike is smaller than the one recommended by the district staff, but it's still too high for San Diego County, the district's largest customer. San Diego wants to cap these rate increases at 3% annually. The embattled George Zimmerman has launched a personal website to allow supporters to donate money to his legal defense. Zimmerman has admitted to fatally shooting Florida teenager Trayvon Martin in February. Zimmerman's attorneys have confirmed the authenticity of the site, therealgeorgezimmerman.com. Zimmerman wrote that he will use the site to communicate directly with his supporters. And now we check in with Kendall Fisher to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Kendall.
Thank you. Tonight we'll bring you the details on Santorum's dropout from the presidential campaign. Then transgender women are now allowed in the Miss USA pageant. We have the full story. And did you know it's National Sibling Day? We covered it, and you can catch the details tonight at 6 on ATVN.
Thank you so much. And that's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Anna Catherine Brigida, Evan Budrovich, and John Diebold. Aaron Schrank is our producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Emily Frost.